Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Bill G and Alex King. Today is Tuesday, May the 14th, 2019. It's 8 a.m. in New York, 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, 1 p.m. in London, and in Sydney, Australia, it's 10 p.m. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I am happy to be doing our Tuesday morning show with Alex and Bill, particularly because Bill has such a wonderful memory, and he also listens to all the episodes, so he can tell me exactly what we talked about last week. And if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have a topic today. But Bill, thank you for saving my bacon. I appreciate that. <I'm not sure. laughs> Because Bill remembered that we're supposed to be talking today about how to use SRT, spirit response. Is it spirit response therapy or spiritual response therapy?
It's spiritual response
spiritual.
Therapy. That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, I we kept going back and forth. And I said, I don't know what, whichever it was, SRT, using SRT in your daily life.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, certainly we've done a lot showing how things work when you work with an SRT specialist, a practitioner. Do you call yourself a practitioner or a coach? What do you call yourself?
I call myself a certified consultant.
A consultant. Okay. Yeah. So when you work with a consultant, but a certified consultant.
Certified. Oh,
yes. Yes.
The certified part is really important.
Yeah, well, I mean, I paid enough for it, so.
Exactly. You claim your title.
Yeah, you almost should have, like, initials or something like that, shouldn't you? Isn't that the way it usually works with degrees? Or, I don't know, maybe it's not certifications, but yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so
you
we want to talk about.
Can CC after his name?
CC? Yeah. Yeah, that's an idea.
Yeah.
Okay, that works. So, yeah, we want to talk about how to apply it just for anybody who wants to try to apply it in their own lives. And I know, Bill, you kind of started that way because you were trying to help yourself and your wife, and you kind of stumbled upon this thing. And I don't remember the exact story, but I remember you told it the first time around.
Well, the first time and also, you know, we'll not just talk about SRT, but we'll also talk about any other kind of healing modality or whatever that you're, any kind of practice that
you're
into. I started out learning SRT. I first started out learning Reiki. The reason why I learned how to do Reiki was, again, to help my wife out because, she was going through acupuncture school at the time and she was learning about, energy work along with her acupuncture curriculum, mostly about, you know, guarding your energy. So that way when you're working on somebody, especially when you got somebody on the table, you can oftentimes take on their energy. Massage therapists run into this a lot. Linda Armstrong told a story about a massage therapist friend of hers that was working on people, and she would feel so drained afterwards. And, well, my first question to that person would be, okay, are you grounding? Are you when you're working on somebody, are you, after each client, are you cleansing the energy off of you? Because especially when you're working on somebody and you're touching them and you're affecting their chakras and you're making a very physical contact with them, your energy is blending with their energy. And so if you're pulling bad stuff off and you're releasing tension, because tension is when you have muscle knots, that is energy. Mm-hmm. And so when you're releasing them, you're releasing the energy. And when you hold on to, when you have muscle knots and whatever that are energetic in nature, often they are emotional in nature. So when you release them, you're releasing emotions. And those kind of emotions scatter everywhere. And you just, and if you suck them all in as a, like a magnet, when you're the practitioner, you're going to feel lousy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so you have to be constantly clearing. You have to constantly be grounding. And so we learned Reiki that for that purpose, because Tina knew she was going to be doing work on clients, and clients don't come to you unless they've got problems.
No kidding, really?
Yeah. And so you take on that energy, and so you need to be able to release it. So we both learned Reiki together, and I found right away that I liked it. I found that, you know, my teaching background enabled me to be a teacher of it. So I was a teacher for a while. And then years later, we moved into a house that had a lot of non-physical entities coming in all the time because it was on the conjunction of a couple of energy ley lines or, you know, energy conduits that are on the Earth. And so it was Grand Central Station for non-physical entities. And so, we had the South Jersey Ghost Hunters in there, and they were like, yeah, you've got a haunted house here. I'm like, okay, what do we do about it? They're like, But then one of them happened to know of this SRT practitioner. And so we gave her a call. We did a session with her about the house. And she cleared the house. And then she said, you know, this is going to have to be done pretty often in order to keep the house clear, because you can't stop the energetic flow of what your house is. And so she suggested that one of us actually learns SRT so that way we can actually do this on a regular basis. And I found this guy up in North Jersey, a guy named Reverend Ray De La Cruz. And so I spent a couple of weekends up there learning SRT for the purpose of clearing my own house. I had no intention of using it for really any other purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But the main part of the training, though, is working on yourself. And so in order to understand how SRT works, you have to be doing constant clearing of yourself. And I warn my clients sometimes when they come to see me that after a two-hour session, you're going to feel a lot of energy movement. It's going to feel draining. You're going to feel tired. You're going to have some symptoms. You're going to have emotional stuff is going to come up. Memories are going to come up. When you're doing an SRT training and you have been doing this for 8 hours in a day, you're going to feel some stuff. It is very, very heavy work. And you're only working on yourself. You're not working on other people. The SRT training program is not really designed to be a method that you learn to build into a business until later. That comes later. Initially, the basic and advanced training is how to work on yourself. And that's why I recommend that for people who've got a lot of stuff they need to work on. I mean, it's great if you just come to see me and I do a session on you. We clear out some stuff, or maybe we do multiple sessions. But there are some clients who really take to it, really want to learn it, and which is why I recommend that they actually get the real training from a certified teacher. Because that's the work. That's where the real work starts, and the real work never ends. I mean, even this past weekend, my wife and I have been doing. We spent hours and hours this weekend working on ourselves, because you know we work on our relationship, we work on our career, we work on everything that works around that. We're trying to.
Excuse me.
Oh, that's you.
I almost died, but I'm cool.
Anyway, we're constantly working on stuff within ourselves, and every time you peel back the onion, there's more and more to do. Every time I think I got myself covered, we do a session together and we realize, wow, there's more stuff to do. There's more lessons to learn and more life path that we need to figure out.
So, which makes sense. I mean, anybody who studies law of attraction and tries to learn how to be a better deliberate creator or a conscious creator knows you're constantly working on yourself just for one really, really basic task. And that is focusing on what you want and not on what you don't want, mm-hmm. which is an amazingly difficult thing to do. It takes mm-hmm. a lot of practice and a lot of trial and error, a lot of mistakes that didn't quite work. Why am I focusing on that? Mm-hmm. Lots of processes to work on to do that. Anything from journaling to meditation to mirror exercises to all kinds of talking things you can do. my God, I mean, it's just an ongoing thing. So of course, yes. I mean, any therapist can tell us that, right? That's what therapists deal with all the time. Stuff comes up and it just keeps coming up until finally you clear everything out and you get to the point where the client is healthy enough to be living their life the way they want to without a therapist.
Right. I mean, just look at the podcast. I mean, if law of attraction was simply focus on what you want, not what you don't want. See you later.
Yeah, bye. And end a podcast. Have fun. And by the way, for people who are connecting to the live stream to watch us, this is also Q&A. I mean, we're going to be talking today about various things you can do, particularly with SRT, to work on yourself. How can you use it in your own life? So if you have questions that you'd like us to address, particularly that you'd like Bill to address, you know, just use the live stream comments section. On your smartphone device, you probably have to scroll down to find that. It's probably near the bottom of your screen. So just scroll down. You'll be able to type your comments there. But we would be very happy to include your questions as we're talking. And I just realized that I'm remiss because I have not acknowledged that Alex has her beautiful ears on today.
And actually, they're new.
They're new. They're new ears, and they sparkle. And I really like
that. They do. Yeah, I love the sparkle.
Well, you do, and you do it every single time you're on the show. But I also wanted to ask you, I mean, you have had plenty of things to work on in your life. I mean, you've gotten professional help to work on stuff, too, and I'm pretty sure you work on your own things on your own. So is this a show topic that is kind of near and dear to your heart, all the different things you can do to work on yourself?
Well, I wanted to say yes, starting off with what Bill was talking about in the beginning about guarding your energy. And as a hairstylist, you deal with a lot of people's drama and energy and all kinds of stuff. And you bring that home. Because especially if someone who loves other people's drama, I'm like, girl, guess what happened today? But you don't realize how you're internalizing it, and it rubs off in your home life. So you have to be aware of that. But other than that, I don't journal. I don't meditate because I can't focus. And I do my version of mirror exercises. So that's good, working for me so far.
Those are good. Hey, you do what you
can do. I feel like I need another practice, but I don't know what it is yet. But I haven't gotten off my butt to research anything. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that does help. Yeah, you have to kind of take action at some point, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to take my hands off the oars, you know? It'll happen.
We all try to do that. And then we reach for the oars again. I've never figured that one out. Bill, why do we keep reaching for the oars? Do you know?
Because McDonald's is over there. That's
McDonald's. It's all McDonald's fault. That's what it is.
Actually, my blog post last week was about letting go of the oars.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good topic.
It is a great topic. And being the hairstylist thing, you're working right around that person's crown chakra.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like I said, if I knew then what I know now, it would have been totally different.
Yeah. Any professional out there who works directly with people where you are touching another person on a daily basis, either, you know, a hairstylist or a massage therapist or anybody where it's necessary for you to get within the personal space of somebody else, you have got to learn how to keep yourself clear. Absolutely necessary.
So let's talk about using SRT for that purpose. I mean, first of all, there's a bit of a discipline to learn here. Yes. And I know you've kind of gone over this in the past, but maybe you can just kind of go over some basic concepts that people can keep in mind if they're deciding, yes, I'd like to give SRT a try and see if I can use that as one of my many methods that I use to try to redirect my thoughts every day.
Well, before going into SRT, if you're the kind of person who has to touch somebody or whatever, has to be in somebody's field and need to be cleared, my recommendation is actually not to start with SRT, but to start with Reiki. Most SRT practitioners are not as easy to find. There's not that many of us. But we're spread out throughout the world, but if you were to look up on the website, the SRA website, likely you may find only one or two in your state, or if you find a lot in your state, they may be hours and hours away from you and whatever. So that's exactly convenient. No, we do this work online too, so that's not a problem. But if you want something you can learn quickly and relatively inexpensively, you can look up who are your local Reiki practitioners. And there are Reiki practitioners everywhere. In my town alone here in Rutland, there are over half a dozen Reiki practitioners. And, and half of them are teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there's this guy over at the Pyramid Holistic Wellness Center. There's another person at the Vermont Herbal Shop. And all of that is within a 10-mile radius of Rutland. And Rutland, we don't have that much of a population. We only have about 10,000 people in this whole city.
Yes.
But in that small town, there are plenty of practitioners. So if you just look up a Reiki practitioner in your Yellow Pages or just on the web, Reiki practitioners near me, likely you're going to be able to find one within a 10-minute to a half-hour drive from where you are, unless you live way out in the sticks. But, yeah.
You just showed your age, Bill, because I can't even remember the last time I used the Yellow Pages. I can't remember the last time I saw Yellow Pages.
So. They're online.
I know they're online, but I mean, physical Yellow Pages. When was the last time you saw a physical Yellow Pages book?
They actually still do. Vermont is a unique place. Technology-wise, we're about 10 years behind the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
Yes, okay. The phone book still arrives, and we put it directly in the recycling bin because we never use it.
Well, at least you're using flip phones. That's good.
It's funny because my mother saw a meme that she told me about yesterday about, she's like, isn't it funny how people are complaining about their information being all over the internet when there used to be a book that came to your house every year with your name, your address, and everything.
Yeah. It's true. Of course, the one difference was that the phone book entry didn't include your personal habits, your pets' names, all your favorite reading preferences, all that kind of thing. But your point is a valid point.
Yeah.
Anyway, that would be my first recommendation if you want to dive into this type of work, is start off with Reiki, because it's, like I said, it's relatively inexpensive. You can usually get the full training for less than $1,000, usually it's less than $500 usually. And there are some people who are willing to give out the training for free.
Yeah, so, I got mine for free.
Yeah, so it's very widely disseminated. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a time, I mean, I can go on and on about Reiki because there was a time when it was a carefully guarded secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through the Usui tradition, and you had to pay like $10,000 to get your training and whatever. But that has.
And I got to ask you, I mean, was that anything other than a money-making thing? Why was it a secret?
It was a secret because it was partially a money-making thing, but it was also the founders didn't feel at the time that the world was ready for that kind of healing. Because they saw it as being kind of woo and whatever. And there were clinics in Japan that did this specifically. And right after Dr. Sui died, there were his followers created, you know, this training program. I mean, he trained only a select group of people for his clinic in Japan. And this was back in the 1800s. So this was quite a while ago. And then after he died, his followers started teaching others, and then it started to grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. And but again, they kept it a very carefully guarded secret. I mean, I learned Reiki in the mid-1990s, and at that point, it was difficult to find a Reiki practitioner. Mm-hmm. And when you did find a Reiki practitioner, you found a Reiki teacher, they charged you through the nose for getting the training.
Right.
And then in the late 90s, early 2000s, a democratization took place.
Wow.
where practitioners started to incorporate different types of healing into Reiki. And now there are not just, when you go to a Reiki practitioner, it's not just one Reiki person or one Reiki tradition now. There are now dozens of different Reiki traditions. Like, for example, the teacher in town here at the Pyramid teaches a traditional Usui Reiki, whereas the person over in West Rutland teaches what she calls fire Reiki. And again, she learned traditional Reiki, and then she learned a supplemental Reiki called fire Reiki. Now, I haven't experienced it yet, but it sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there are literally dozens of different brands now of Reiki, depending on whatever teacher. And like you said, you got your Reiki training for free, whereas, you know, if you get to one of these more specialty brands, you'll be paying a little more for it because you'll be learning it directly from the person who developed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's healthy, too, because ultimately we want this kind of thing to be widely disseminated, I think. I mean, I can understand where the founder was coming from, particularly in the 1800s. But
yes.
By the same token, he was just reacting to fear. I don't know if he realized that, but he was just reacting to fear. And, you know, the more fearless we become, the more everybody benefits from it. And we're creative beings. We are all of us creative beings. Therefore, as we develop something new, we're doing it because we're creative, not because we're thieves, just because that's we do. We are creators. So, of course, creators are going to create. And that's what just adds and adds and adds and adds to the I guess you call it the race consciousness or the global consciousness or something.
Right, right.
Yeah, we just learn more and more and more that way.
Okay. Well, after you've done Reiki and you get to feel the energy coming out of your hands and all that stuff, and you get to and you learn how to ground, because that's the one thing that Reiki teaches you better than anything else, I think, is teaches you how to ground, how to balance your chakras and keep yourself grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to take it a step further,
okay.
If you want to really figure out what your soul programs are that are preventing you from living your best life, then you can move on to SRT after that. Or, I mean, there are other modalities out there, but that's the one I'm familiar with, is SRT. And you start off by finding an SRT practitioner and having a few sessions and see if it resonates with you. If it resonates with you, then, and you want to learn it, then, you know, you seek out a certified teacher and you actually pay your money and get the training. Word of caution, though.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing the work of clearing yourself, you have to be very careful about how you use this, because this is powerful technology. If you are asking questions or trying to clear some stuff out from a position of lack, you're going to find yourself going down certain rabbit holes that is difficult to get out of. I've known several people who have started, who learned this technology, and it became an obsession for them. And the reason why it became an obsession for them is because their vibration was at such a low level that they were asking the wrong questions, or they were framing the questions in the wrong way. And yes, there is a right and wrong way to do it, because the right way to frame a question is to ask, is to release your ego and to ask the question from a position of abundance. That I am receiving the love of the universe, and that I am learning things to clear and make myself a better person.
Mm-hmm.
If you approach it instead saying, I want to help the world because the world is broken. I want to help other people because other people are broken. Then you're going to run into problems, because then all of that becomes a mirror for yourself, and you're going to start getting answers to questions that are guided by ego rather than guided by high self. Because I can take a pendulum and I can ask a question, and I can keep my ego at a very high level, and it's going to tell me exactly what I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
because it works by subtle muscle movements of your, it's an unconscious. The reason why we use a pendulum is because the swing of the pendulum is guided by your subconscious. And if your subconscious is not at a high vibrational place, or the question that you're asking is too emotionally charged, where you can't put your ego aside, it's going to give you the answer you're looking for and not the answer that you need to hear. Mm-hmm. And if you start believing those ego-guided questions, it can make you paranoid, especially when you start, because we deal a lot with non-physical entities. You can start developing an elaborate fiction around how you are this light warrior fighting demons, what was that movie? John Carpenter. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Carpenter style. Yeah, or...
I'm trying to think what that was called,
Or like Neo or whatever. Neo.
The Matrix.
Are you talking about Constantine?
Constantine, yes. Yes. But yeah, you could... If you start thinking in those ways, you're going to drive yourself crazy. it's not going to be a good thing. You're actually going to be doing more harm than good. I mean, it's just like any other kind of skill that you're learning. If you don't learn to do it right, you can hurt yourself. You're learning how to use a nail gun. You don't know how to use a nail gun, and you're trying to use a nail gun. You're going to hurt yourself.
This can happen, no doubt about that. Now, and it raises two questions for me. There's an obvious one, but there's also a preliminary question that I always like to ask first, because I find that the word ego gets kind of thrown around a lot. So let's start with defining what we mean by ego. But then once we've done that, what can we do to make sure that we don't get the ego in the way?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, first of all, we define the ego as those. It's a very physical based place to be. Your ego is the part of you that needs constant stroking and reassurance that you're a good person and I'm doing okay and that I'm loved, and it's very externally based.
Ugh, I dated a guy like that. So annoying.
Yes. It's so, so when your ego is happy, it's usually externally based. And when your ego is unhappy, it's usually externally based, where you're looking for verification, for validation.
Would it be fair to say then that this particular definition of ego that we're using here today would be somewhat equivalent to having low self-esteem or self-confidence?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you're finding that the question that you're asking is where you're seeking validation of any kind, does this other person love me? Do the spirits love me? Are angels watching over me and protecting me and keeping me safe? Those are ego-based questions. And when you ask those questions, you're going to get answers according to however you are feeling at that moment.
Right.
Which is very annoying. I mean, because you think you're getting good answers, and you find out all you're doing is just mirroring your own stuff back at you.
Yeah, you're just
exactly.
Mirroring yourself.
Exactly.
Now, I have a question.
Yes.
If... can this also, have you ever had a client or a patient, I don't know which one you call them, repeatedly come to you and feeling like they can't do anything in life unless they ask you what spirit says?
90% of them.
So there's a little consistency here. Okay.
Because I find that a lot with psychics. There are some people that fall into it and they're like, oh my God, I need to talk to my psychic before I make this decision. And it's like their entire life. Like they're running money into the ground because you're going to see these psychics every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So
You see it on Facebook too. You see people saying, you know, I keep seeing number combinations. What do the number combinations mean? I keep seeing these signs. What do these signs mean?
Yes.
And the answer to that question is, if it means something to you, then it probably means something to you.
Exactly. Right. If it doesn't, then don't worry about it.
Yeah, validation is a beast.
It is a beast. It is a beast. And now, you can see, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, people shouldn't see me. I'm saying that that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you're seeing if you're seeing a psychic and you're seeing a SRT practitioner because you are seeking validation, you're not using it to what it is meant to provide for you.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to ask a really esoteric question here. Okay. One of the key concepts that Abraham, for instance, teaches us is the idea that as we make choices in our lives, others might look at those choices and say, what are you making those choices for? I mean, you're crazy to be doing that. All you're doing is you're harming yourself, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Or why would you even choose to do something so hateful as whatever X is, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes, well, if you're spending a lot of time on what we're now defining as ego-based questions. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? But Abraham points out, you know, there's a purpose to all of it. We may not know what the purpose is, but there's a purpose to it. And even the person who's doing it themselves may not know what their own purpose is. And they find out later, oh, the purpose was actually to learn this thing that I needed to learn, or to do that thing that I was trying to do, or whatever it is. So what do you think about that? Now, I have to admit, that's kind of an out there woo-woo kind of question, but I think it's important.
It is. It is an important question. And actually, I just, right before the podcast, I just finished writing my blog for the week. I haven't posted it yet, but it goes right onto this topic.
Oh, okay.
And the
law of attraction again.
Right. Law of attraction. And in this particular case, a client of mine asked me to do some work on her adult son. Because, you know, he's having medical issues and he's having self-esteem issues and whatever. Can you fix him?
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
And my first response to her is, okay, I'll research it, but I'm not going to be able to clear it for your benefit.
Yes. Nicely phrased, I might say.
Right.
Yes.
Because that's not what we do here.
Mm-hmm.
We can't fix anybody.
Yeah.
And even the clients who come and see me, I make it clear, we are not here to fix you.
Mm-hmm.
We are here to provide you with information for you to fix yourself.
Yes.
Yes, yes, the idea is that somehow people think that somehow I can repair somebody else, that I can make somebody else better, ignoring the fact that the only person who can make that person better is themselves.
Right.
And who's to say that they need to be better? That's
what that your point,
vision
yeah.
of them is. Right.
That, exactly.
Yeah. And that's what Malabika was saying when we had her on too, is that he asks when someone wants to take her class, the first question she asks is, why do you want to learn this?
Mm-hmm.
And if their answer is, I want to help heal the world, she's like, well, then this isn't for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to be taking the class to learn how to heal yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or
maybe make a deal with a person. Tell you what, heal yourself first and then come back. or I'll help you heal yourself and then come back.
Actually, she doesn't even go that far. She says, no, you're coming here to heal yourself. You're coming here to learn how to heal yourself. And then after taking the basic class and taking the advanced class, and you've been doing it for a while, and then you decide, hey, I want to help others now because I've got my own crap together. Then there's an application process. There's another class you have to take. And then that's no guarantee that you'll be able to practice as a certified consultant. You actually have to submit an application to the certification committee. And then the certification committee reviews your application and then breaks out the pendulum. They ask high self, what is the percentage of ego for this person to be doing this work for others?
Mm-hmm.
And if they get anything over 10%, they reject the application.
Wow. That's interesting. And I would also think, too, that there are going to be some people who will actually follow through, and they're going to be the small minority, who will follow through and become certified and get all this, you know, learn all this stuff and become like what you do. They, you know, they become a certified consultant, I believe.
Yeah.
A professional. Yes.
But I'd also be willing to bet that there's a whole lot of people who, if they actively get involved in, okay, I'm going to work on myself. Yes, I really want to work on other people, but I agree. I'll work on myself for a while. And they keep working on themselves. I bet you there's a whole lot of people who get to the point where they just say, you know what? It doesn't really matter whether I'm helping anybody else anymore.
Right. Well, and actually that should be the place you should start. That's the place you start, because the place you start is, I'm here to help myself, and I'm going to keep working through my stuff. And like I said, this past weekend, my wife and I worked for hours on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing this work since 2003. You'd think that I had gotten it together by now. But no.
And I would also think that there are going to be people, I'm thinking of Linda Armstrong, I'm thinking of you, who get to the point where they have such connection to energy that all they're doing a lot of the time is just putting out good energy to people and healing that way and not worrying about, I got to fix anybody. Just here comes the good energy. It's pouring out. Be ready to receive it. Mm-hmm. You know, which is a way of satisfying that need to help the world, but to do it in a way where you don't get caught up in, oh my God, things aren't improving as fast as I want them to. Why doesn't anybody learn this stuff? What's wrong with people?
It's very frustrating when I, when a client sees me, especially a client who sees me often, we provide very clear instructions from spirit, and then they go home and do the exact opposite. Again, when I feel frustrated, I'm saying, okay, ego is a little bruised here. I was seeking validation in them actually following through.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it as job security.
It's actually funny about that, because yes, those types of clients are good for the cash flow.
They are. They just aren't really growing very well.
But they're not good for your energy, though.
In the long run, they're very frustrating. As a practitioner, they're very frustrating to work with because of the fact that they can't seem to get past the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, as a practitioner, you feel ineffective after a while. And then after a while, you're like, okay, this is not working. We need to refer you out to somebody else who might be able to help you better, because I say stuff, spirit says stuff, you go home, you do the opposite.
This is where I admire people like my wife. And the person that my wife was a psychotherapist for 10 years, and the person that my wife saw as a psychotherapist, and the few other people like them who all have the philosophy, grow or go. If you aren't here to grow, if you aren't here to get better, get out of here. Mm-hmm. I'll kick you out of my office if I have to.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think those people are probably doing more service than any other practitioner of any kind in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually, every practitioner runs into this. I mean, whenever I go to see my dentist, and my dentist is like, "Wow, your teeth are doing pretty good." And I was like, "Well, you told me I needed to get a water pick, so I got a water pick." And
they
were like, "You know, 99% of the people who come in to get their teeth cleaned don't listen to a darn word I say, and they come back and their teeth are all rotting out." And so it's the same deal. I mean, if you're going to see a professional to get work done, and they tell you to go home and do something different that you've been doing, because whatever you're doing
isn't working.
Clearly, it's not working. We have evidence to show it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go home and say, whatever, and just do whatever you were doing before, that's shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not shame on your practitioner, your professional you went to go see, because they gave you the best advice they knew how to do. Now, if you think they're giving you bad advice, then go see somebody else.
Right.
But
yeah, that's the thing that gets me. Why would you keep paying good money in order to not follow the advice of the person you're paying?
Right.
I don't follow that one.
Yeah.
I never have. I've never really understood that. I know people do it.
Right.
I understand there's dependency involved. I understand that there's weak self-esteem involved. And so I can kind of, you know, come to terms with it that way. But deep down inside, I said to myself, are you crazy?
Right. And actually, that's the definition of crazy, to keep the same thing over
same thing over and over again.
Different results.
This is true. I remember the first time I heard that, I said to myself, yeah, well, that's obvious. How could that be a cliche? I mean, isn't that true?
Not me. I was like, that's true.
But to get back to my story of my client, when she asked me to clear her son and whatever, I did the research, and the research came back that this is something he needed to experience.
Mm.
And this was his life path. And I said, what you need to do, and I'm going to clear you now of your need to fix this. Because
mm-hmm.
your son's all grown up. He's in his late 20s and whatever. He's making his choices and he's living his life. If he right now is not in a place energetically to start working on his crap, to start clearing stuff out or to learn from anything or see a practitioner or whatever, there's nothing you can do to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
I had another client who came to see me, and her son was currently serving a term in prison for drug dealing.
Mm.
And her question was, where did I go wrong? And then the answer was, nothing.
It's not about you.
Yeah, it wasn't about you. It was about this was something he needed to experience in this lifetime. And yes, and we look at these people and we're like, what are you doing to your life? Why are you doing this? That is so wrong. And again, then you have to remind yourself, wait a second. Who am I to judge here?
Yeah.
I have my own stuff to work on.
Right.
No kidding.
I got my own things to work on, and whatever they're doing is right for them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's the worst possible thing they could be doing, it is right for them because that is on their soul path. They are mm-hmm. on their soul path. They are doing their thing. Now, if you, person listening here right now, want to change that, you want to change the script, you want to live a better life, then you need to make that choice for yourself, and you cannot make that choice for anybody else.
That's right.
If you have a spouse that wants to not get involved in this stuff and you do, yes, you're going to be moving in different directions. And you can't bring them along. You can't bring them along kicking and screaming. Because they're going to keep doing what they're doing, and because this is all very, very internal work.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, Louise and I spent a good portion of time in the hospital. She had a deal going on with this medical thing she's been dealing with, and had to make an adjustment in her medications. And while we were there, in one of the other rooms where people were being treated, I was kind of walking the halls at one point because we were just waiting for some lab results to come back. And I saw this guy in an orange jumpsuit, and I realized he was a prisoner. Mm-hmm. And he was there with a couple corrections officers, and his face looked like it had been worked over by a baseball bat. I mean, it was just really, really not a very happy looking scene at all. And I remember my first reaction was, there but for the grace of God go I. Like, thank God I don't live that guy's life.
Yeah.
And then wondering myself, why is he living that life that way? And then kind of getting to the point where you talked about, Bill, like, well, he had some reason to go there. I mean, I'm glad I'm not going down that path, but he has a reason for it, and I don't know what it is. And then I just moved on.
And then I moved on.
And even people who...
I make that point because I could have gotten into, oh, God, we got to do something to save this poor guy from being beat up in prison.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I could have gone there. Or I could have gone into, well, you know, I could have implied, well, he's probably there because he has a drug addiction. Oh, right. And how terrible. We're throwing people into prison on drugs. I could go on down a number of different rabbit holes.
Or
if I really, really wanted to.
Or fear, too. Oh, my God, keep that guy away from me.
He oh, may- yeah. Well, actually, at one point, they walked him down the hall because they wanted him to take an eye test, and they walked him right past me. And I could have had that reaction there, the fear reaction.
Right, right.
Actually, all he was just doing was walking down the hall, but that wouldn't have stopped me from having a fear reaction if I wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Some people feel that way, you know, when a police officer walks in the room.
Oh, yeah.
Or a black person walks in the room.
Or a black person walks in the room. Or any fill-in-the-blank walks in the room.
Yeah.
It happens with tall people, too, by the way.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, yeah. You see it a lot. I see it a lot, I should say. I can tell you, I can walk into a store, and I can see, you know, all the other patrons there, and they're all going to check me out because I'm tall, right? They want to look at, you know, this tall man. And there'll be one of three different reactions. First, there's little kids who are just open and blatant about it. They're like, wow, he's tall. That's one of them. The second one is... particularly with some women, you get that look where they're looking up and down saying, whoa, you know, you can just kind of see the wheels going, right? And then there's the third group that just kind of smiles and, you know, they come up with some joke. And then there's the fourth group that's terrified of you.
Yeah.
You can just see them trying to find the nearest aisle to hide in, like I'm going to attack them or something.
Right.
Well, maybe they feel like you're going to fall over and then it's a bull in a china shop situation. And taking everything down with them. Ah!
I can see that. If you're over a certain height, then you've forgotten how to walk. Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Right.
Sorry, that's a real aside there, but I just had to throw that in there.
Is there the fifth type of people that are like, oh, he can reach that shelf for me?
I have had people ask, can you reach this off the shelf for me?
Yeah.
I even had one, because Louise and I often go shopping together. I had one who turned to Louise and said, can I borrow your husband for a minute?
That probably would have been me. I've learned in life, you go to the wife first.
That's right. Crazy. So.
But yes.
Sorry, Bill, we so rudely interrupted you with a bit of wild humor there.
Yeah, but, yeah, but yes, there's a lot of directions you could have gone down. And I see when I'm doing tax preparations, you get all kinds of people, which is why I love doing tax prep. You get all kinds of people. Everybody needs to do their taxes. So it's you get the whole gamut of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get the ex-cons, you get the people, whatever. And the thing is, when you actually have them sitting down in front of you and you talk to them like a person, the first thing you realize is that everybody's a person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That no matter what label that they put on themselves for the rest of the world to see, everybody's a person.
Mm-hmm. What a valuable insight that is. I mean, anybody who wants to work on their self-esteem, who feels like they're dealing with that ego issue we were talking about, start there. Just start with everybody is a person and appreciate them for themselves as people. You'll knock a whole bunch of crap out of your life just by doing that.
Yeah. Right. You skip a bunch of steps doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anybody who's ever worked retail learns that pretty quickly, too.
Very quickly.
Oh.
I mean, you work with it on the tax side. I worked with it on the bank teller side. Nothing like working with people with their money to give you an idea of what people are really like. So anyway, we really distracted you, Bill, but go back to what you're talking about.
All right, I've lost my train of thought, too.
That it was very effective, I have to say. We did a good job.
That's our job.
I think we're actually where we're going here. We were kind of derailing you from the fact that you were talking about how when you're working on this stuff, you want to make sure you're not working from an ego point of view.
Right.
And then once you're not working on an ego point of view, once you have an appreciation of that, what's the next step?
The next step is if you're going to be working on yourself, you have to make sure that your ego is as low as possible. And we include that in the training. Mm-hmm. And that what they talk about is keeping your ego at less than 3%.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Why 3%? It's a number that Robert came up with.
No, okay. I'll go with it. That's fine. It's a nice low number. I like that. That's good.
0%, if you go with 0% ego,
that's almost impossible.
Then you're dead. You know.
Yeah.
So he was like, okay, you got to have something in order to keep breathing. So
we'll let you have 3%.
We'll let you have 3%.
By the way, it's a sobering thing. I mean, I've done a little bit of experimenting with a pendulum and trying to do some of these practices. And it's a sobering thing to ask, okay, so how much my ego is in the way? And it comes back with 60%. And I say, oh, shit. What's going on here?
Or that you've done all this prep to work. You've done the whole prep to work. You got your ego down to less than 3%. You ask one question. He's like, okay, how much ego is attached to that? 90%. You're like, what happened was the question had ego attached to it.
The question had ego. Yep.
Yeah. You do all the prep to work and you ask a question, does somebody love me? You've completely blown your cover.
Right. Your cover.
So, yeah. And so a better way of asking a question of that nature, if you're asking questions about relationships and that sort of thing, rather than asking, does the person love me? Which is not, you're not going to get a right answer.
Mm-mm.
You can ask the question is, what's the percentage of positive energy towards the relationship with this particular person? And at the time, and the thing is, the question itself doesn't have a whole lot of ego attached to it, because it's, you're just asking for a number. You're not really asking for anything else.
So you want to try to avoid yes or no questions.
You want to avoid yes or no questions, especially when you're coming into questions about yourself.
Right. Well, isn't this also about really kind of taking inventory and asking yourself, just how strong or weak am I feeling right now? Just
right.
How vulnerable am I feeling? Just how controlling am I feeling? And just, you know, taking internal inventory and recognizing there is this state that's going on right now, and it's going to influence whatever question and answer I put out there and get back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, I printed out your Abraham Hicks emotional scale chart.
Oh.
And I've started using it right away. In fact, now every time someone comes to see me, I start there.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah.
And because it is a great, I looked at it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a great tool to get a gauge of how much will their ego get in the way here.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's a very interesting idea.
Because if you're really low on the emotional scale, mm-hmm. then your ego has more of a chance of getting in the way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the high end of the scale, then it's like, you know, whatever, man, it's good. Let it come. I can deal with this. I got this.
Yeah.
It's funny. I've been using my own scale there, my own graph, and hadn't thought about it in those terms. But as I think about it, yeah, that's right. That's what that's actually telling me. Mm-hmm. It's telling me, am I in a good place for doing this kind of work? I wasn't using it that way, but that really is what it's telling me. So it's nice to know. I am not an SRT expert, and I've already contributed to it. How about that?
Nice.
Well, you contributed to my work, because now I'm going to use this for every client.
This is
awesome, awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Wow. I feel really good right now. Thank you.
Good.
So again, when you're doing the work for yourself, check into your emotions, see where you are. Check into your ego. Do the prep to work. Get it down to less than 3%. But then also check into your emotional state. Where are mm-hmm. you right now in your emotional state? So that, and that will give you a better gauge of what your ego's ability to come in and do run interference.
By the way, I wanted to mention something here, and this is going to sound a bit egotistical, but but it's also the topic I'm addressing, so that's why it's going to sound this way.
Okay.
When I created this scale, I didn't do it with any concept of what you just described. It was not done for the purpose of giving you this tool to, you mm-hmm. know, start off your sessions each time. I didn't do it for anything like that. I did it just because I wanted to find out where I was, and sometimes I just couldn't even tell. And mm-hmm. ended up producing a result that made my ego feel good.
Right.
and I think it's a key point. I wasn't aiming to make my ego feel
yes.
good.
Yes.
And that's when you get the best strokes, because
right.
you're not focused on that.
Right.
Whereas if I went at it like, oh, geez, I got to create this scale, because if I can do it just right, my ego is going to get stroked. Then you're on the wrong path.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to publish a million of these and I'm going to be rich.
Yeah.
It's all about intention.
It is. Yeah. And your intention came from the right place. When you developed it, it was coming from the right place. It's like, I just want to know where I'm at. And this is a great, and I've read about this. I understand this emotional scale. I understand that when I'm at a certain place, this is what it means. I can create this for myself. And then when you created it, it was like, wow, this is really useful. And then you told Louis about it. You told Joel about it. You told, you know, and then when you told me about it, it was like, you know, give me that.
Give me a copy. Yeah.
I need that because I've been running into this problem a lot with clients where their egos get in the way and it's hard for me to get through that. And then when after I started seeing it, I was like, wow, this is a great tool.
That's great. You
know, and I have no ego in the way here. If I see a great tool, I'm taking it.
Absolutely.
I don't care if I was the one who wrote it or not.
And there's a key point here. The key point that I'm trying to get to, and I don't think I really stated it yet. The best way, if you want to help other people, the best way to help other people is literally to help yourself. Because look what happened. I did this to help myself.
Right.
Without any intention of this helping anybody else. And it helped other people.
Awesome.
That's the big lesson right there. You work on yourself knowing that if you do that, other people are going to be helped. You won't necessarily know who they're going to be. It won't be, well, I'll be able to help my son if I do this, or I'll be able to help my friend if I do this. Mm-hmm. It's rather other people will benefit.
Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not even 10 years from now, but somehow someone's going to be helped by it because you helped yourself.
Yes, exactly. That's a good note to end this on because we're almost done with our hour. But that was good. That was really good. So let's keep this going for next week because I think we're on a good roll here. So continuing the personal development aspect of how do you use these things, especially SRT, in your own life. I do want to remind people about becoming a subscriber to the podcast. If you're not yet a subscriber, it's really easy to do. I've even made it simpler by putting into the webpage at loatoday.net. the ability to detect your particular device. Up until now, we've been detecting iPhones and Android phones, which is like, you know, the largest segment of the population. But I've actually added in stuff for Mac users and for PC users. So almost any device you connected with now. But the only thing that I don't have anything specific for is Linux users, and I haven't detected any large numbers of Linux users. So I'm kind of put that one aside for a bit. But you know, 99% of the time, it's going to connect to your device, and it's going to say, okay, yes, here's what you got to do. And it's really easy. So just go through the steps. Make yourself a subscriber. And then just like that, all these episodes are coming right to your device so you can be listening to us all the time. And then when you're listening, share the fact that you're listening. Tell other people. Let them know about it. Tell them about this.
Tell a friend to tell a friend.
Tell a friend to tell a friend. Exactly. Tell them about this cool episode you heard about. Wow, yeah, if I work on my own stuff, other people benefit. Cool. How cool is that? Good stuff. And if you're listening to our live stream, make sure that you're subscribing on YouTube. And I always defer to Alex because she explains it so much better than I do. How do you get the notifications on YouTube once you're a subscriber?
Well, once you're a subscriber, you can go right next to the subscribe button and there's a little bell. And if you hit the little bell, it'll notify you every time that we're live.
Just that simple. Nicely. It's beautiful. It's a thing of beauty is what it is.
Thank you.
And speaking of things of beauty, thank you, Bill, for all the insights you're sharing about how to take these processes, SRT and Reiki and so forth, and incorporate them into our lives. And we'll just continue that discussion next week. So I can't wait to find out. Can you give us a clue what we're going to talk about next week?
I have no idea.
You have no idea. Okay. Whatever the spirit moves you,
we'll
right?
We'll see what happens.
We'll just get the pendulum out. We'll swing it back and forth. We'll say, oh, yeah, that's where we're going. all good stuff. Really good. So thank you very much. Thank you guys for all your help. Thank you to our live stream listeners. We didn't actually have any questions today, but people were watching. I mean, I can see the numbers of people coming in. So thank you to our live stream listeners. And most important of all, thank you to our podcast listeners who are like 99% of the people who listen, because without you, we wouldn't have a podcast. And with that thought in mind, we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.